Hey, what's up? This is John Norris, and you're listening to the Heritage Radio Network.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal. We're here today with a bunch of Long Island brewers on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, April 24th, 2012. Give a shout out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Thank you for helping us bring the show to you. And go to GreatBrewers.com, learn about the Beer Cloud, a very cool mobile app to help you locate your favorite beers, store tasting notes, and get beer and food pairing ideas. Check it out at GreatBrewers.com. And thank you to the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City beer bars, GoodBrewSeal.com, who bring to you July Good Beer Month, which you'll hear a lot more about on this show. All right, here we are at Roberta's in Bushwick on the Heritage Beer Network. Beer Sessions Radio. I've got a very cool group of people in the audience tonight. In the studio. And it's Mark Burford from Blue Point Brewery. We're drinking his Blue Point White IPA. We got John Leahy from Greenport Harbor Brewing. And we got Nico Kremidis, who is a really cool blogger who seems to be the best blogger about beer on Long Island. So how are you guys? Welcome to the show.
How about that?
All right. Hey. Hello. All right.
Hi, Jimmy.
So, you know, we don't think about Long Island so much until we actually go there. But you're so close to New York. You're part of the local New York beer scene. What's going on Long Island, John? You've been out there now in Greenport for how long?
It's going to be 3 years this July. And the funny thing about where we are on Long Island is that we're so close that you just said is our distributor, who's great, Union Beer, great brewers. They tell us that you guys are so close, you don't come in enough. The end of Long Island is actually pretty far out there. It's like a 2-hour drive, but once you get there, it's pretty great. And we've been really excited to grow as a brewery, and as we age, like just be able to kind of access more kind of interesting beers and really get experimental, just because we're that's who we are. So it's been really fun. I mean, we're digging being in New York City and being at the end of Long Island at the same time.
Nico, you've been writing about beer for a while. When did you start blogging about beer?
I've probably been blogging about 3 years now, almost. Super Neat Beer Adventure, yes, for Long Island Pulse Magazine is my blog. And
can you say that again, please?
Super Neat Beer Adventure, yes, with 2 exclamation points.
And a comma.
And a comma. Don't forget the comma, ever.
Where's the comma go?
There's other guys here, but nobody has enough mics.
Right,
we got
there's
Greg Dorosky from Greenport Harbor and Paul. Paul, how do you say your last name?
Lukensky, another Paula.
Yeah, from Blind Bat Brewery. So we got the heart of Long Island beer. You know what's cool about Long Island beer is that not too long ago, I mean, Mark, why don't you tell us about how you guys got started? Because not too long ago, there was just a few people making beer out on Long Island.
Well, the story really is about brewing in other places, and I brewed out west a bit before coming back home. Grew up in Long Island. And it's really, I think the genesis was in on the back of Haleakala volcano in Maui. I think it's the genesis of the whole thing. And the way the story goes is I was living out there. There was a brewery on Oahu called Honolulu Brewing Company at the time. Long gone, unfortunately, to the history of craft beer, but it was a German brewery made a German export beer for the Honolulu market. And I went and visited a buddy of mine that worked at the Maui airport, and he was kind of a kook, And so he was kind of a gun nut kook. And so I would come over, he calls us over to visit for the weekend. We get over there, and he's got an old 72 yellow Suburban. He's got 12 shotguns in it. He's got like, a quarter pound of Maui Bud, and I got 5 cases of Koalau and a giant tank of nitrous oxide. So he goes, "I got something to do." I go, "All right, I'm in. What are we doing?" So we drive up the back of Haleakala Mountain. Now, if anybody's been a tourist there, maybe you rode your bicycle down the other side of it, But on the back side, it's sort of rare and undone. And you go up and you can shoot wild boar and other such things. And so we get up there at 10,000 feet, and we're basically driving around shooting shotguns out and doing nitrous oxide. And, you know, at 10,000 feet, it really has a different effect on you, you know. And so we got the whole thing at the top, and I'm sitting in the front, and I got the, you know, the gas mask strapped on, and I'm about to let the shotgun fly, and we're just, you know, chugging down the Kolau. And as soon as that shotgun went off at 10,000 feet, I get this sound and explosion in my head that just was ringing with the nitrous and everything. And I just said, I have to recreate that with a beer somehow. And
so, Mark,
so that
were
was
you,
sort of the genesis of it all.
Were you friends with Hunter S. Thompson, by the way?
It was sort of a theme at the time, I think. Yeah.
So then how did you start making beer, Mark?
Well, the
and when
this is, well, my first time was at 14 in 1976 with my older brother, and at that time, homebrewing was illegal still, and so we used to drive from Long Island to Queens, and there was an English gentleman who we used to sell barley and hops as a contraband, and so we used to go and we had a secret knock, and he'd look through and see us, and it was sort of like buying dope back before, you know, back in the early days.
Is that for real? Way back then?
Yeah. So this is my older brother. So I was only 15, and my older
barley
brother.
And hop, you had to buy like
before 1978, and Carter making it legal. It was basically contraband and not available in the U.S. And so, you know, from the craft beer start, I was living in San Diego. There's a very early brewery in the craft beer scene called Bolt Brewery, which was northern San Diego County, right at the base of Mount Palomar. And these guys were way ahead of the game. It's 1984-ish, 1985. And they had reconverted an old train car and made a brew pub out of it. And it was in one of those villages where everything, they had a candle maker and they had some other people that dressed up in old clothing. And so you'd go and play darts and stuff, and we'd hang out there. And the guy had a tremendous cocaine problem. And my friends and I, were not doing cocaine at that time. And so we got to know him really well. And he was, unfortunately, he was not able to come in the morning and brew the beer for the brew pub because of his nighttime activities. So we ended up just falling into being able to make the beer. We said, we'll show up for work. We'll make the beer, even though we didn't know anything about it really at the time. But due to his cocaine problem, he was open to that. And so we just started making beer there for him at the Bolt Brewery and learned a lot.
So you were an enabler. We're all enablers.
That's right. And so we were able to make commercial beer and watch people drink our own beer and learn the whole thing from start to finish basically on his dime.
Wow.
Or
so then
$100.
So this was like 40 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So then what happened? How did you end up at Blue Point?
Well,
what is Blue Point, anyways? Come on.
Well, you know, I was.
And where is Blue Point?
Yeah, Blue Point. Well, if you ever had a Blue Point oyster on any menu there worldwide, that's the little sleepy town, the South Shore, about 50 miles out. So if you're on your way to Hamptons and your GPS malfunctions, you can come down and visit us. But it's really where the Blue Point oyster was from. So it's now we have oysters and beer. But I was working at a brewery and a winery combination in Huntington. It was an early, now this is 1993-94, post Long Island Brewing Company, and this is the genesis of really when I said I really should be doing this myself. And we were making beer there in Cobblestone, and the gentleman who was running the place, who was a real nice guy and a visionary in the craft beer scene, we had a cask-only brewery at the time when nobody had any hand pumps in the United States, so that was unusual.
How did you do that?
Well, we didn't sell any beer, is really what happened. And so we started doing keg-conditioned beer. That's all we did, and so we were ahead of the game there. But what happened was he had an idea one day, and he wanted to make it a green situation. So we were going to take trout from the local Cold Spring Harbor trout fishery, and we were going to take the output from the trout, and we were going to put it on the field next to us and grow mushrooms out of it, and we were going to feed the trout the spent barley. Now, it's about August 10th, and he comes to me one day, and I'm brewing in the brewery, and tells me this, right? So it was a winery, so we had those big square boxes that grapes come in. If anybody's ever been to a winery, they see those things. So he goes down and gets 50 trout or whatever, fills it up with water, throws them in there, comes in the next day, and the trout are all dead, of course. So then the day after that, he goes and gets 50 more. Now we're on to murdering 100 trout, and he comes to me and says, I want you to reroute the glycol system through the trout hatchery box, and so we can keep the water cool, because the guy at the hatchery had forgot to tell him that the trout will die above 58 degrees, and it was August 10th and 100 degrees outside. So I told him, no, I'm not doing that. I'm making beer for you. And so what he decided to do was he got one of those ice boxes and put it in front of the place where you sell ice cubes out of, like a deli. And he got a contract for the guy to fill it up. And so he hired the gentleman there, the help, to pour the bags of ice, you know, at a time into the box with the trout were to try to maintain the 58 degrees. Well, no, you know, after about murdering about 600 trout and, you know, trying to keep the whole thing, and, you know.
Was this a brewery or a winery? I lost track.
This was a combination brewery winery. It was really.
What year was this?
94.
In Long Island.
95. Yeah, 95 Long Island. This guy's way ahead of his time, obviously, but he it's a classic business story of not to lose focus on your main product, really. But
what was the main product, though? Trout or?
It was called Cobblestone Ale, and it was a cask condition, keg condition ale that was a nice amber beer that was out for a little while. And so what happened was after
the beer was good. You liked it?
The beer was very good. Open fermenters. We did all keg condition. It was a tough
really
working,
open fermenters. Wow.
Open fermenters, and it was a real tough working environment from a technological standpoint. But we made good beer, and it was hard to explain to people in that time what keg condition beer, that the yeast was still in it, that it was alive, that it was going to be a little cloudy. All those things were a real challenge to bring that to Long Island at the time. And so what happened was after the Trout had all died, and he'd figured out that this was not a good idea, we were having beers one day in the tasting room with him and kind of trying to get him to see the reality and laughing, and the phone rang. And what happened was it was the local ice purveyor, and they were unhappy that we had stopped buying the ice. And according to them, you know, yo, you're buying your ice from somebody else. We're coming down there to take care of you. And so what happens was, no doubt, 20 minutes later, four black Lincolns pull up and the lights are in the tasting room. We're hit the ground. You know, the ice mob is now after us after the whole, you know, it's just trying to make beer, you know, it's just craft beer. So when I'm lying there on the floor and the trout are dead and we're not answering the phone for the sell beer, and the our delivery vehicle's a Saab that was leaking oil, and the mob's at the window trying to beat us up for killing, you know, for using somebody else's ice. It's at that exact point where I said, you know, I could do this better. I could do this myself. I could start a brewery, for God's sakes.
That's awesome.
That was the best story I've ever heard.
So RG, what was the next step? Come on.
The next step was you're becoming to just an stay icon. On the floor until the headlights went
you're
away.
You're an icon overnight, man. Come on.
And so then we put the plan together and just said, we have to, I can do this. You know, we saw that there was a market, you know, I could see that the phone was ringing for the beer and people wanted it really badly, and we just couldn't deliver in that situation. So it was time to, you know, I was just a humble brewer, and it was time to try to figure out the business side of it. And I wrote a business plan from scratch, and I went to the SBA, the Small Business Association. They kind of laughed at me, and then they showed me the way. And there's a wonderful woman that that really helped us out, and we'll always be indebted to her. At the Small Business Administration at Stony Brook. She now works over at Farmingdale, Lucille Wesnowski, and she really worked us through so that we could change the business plan to make it look like what the banks wanted to see. And that was a big difference for us from a business perspective. Because you're doing a business plan, and this is nothing. We had a barn, you know, we had a building that was decrepit and an idea, and we didn't have a you know, we weren't rich guys. We just basically maxed out our credit cards and jumped off the hill. She showed us how to get, you know, extract money out of the federal system, and that's basically how we got off and running.
Wow. Awesome. All right, man. So then what year was that, man?
That was 97, and so it took us a year to get the funding, get the building built. We did everything by hand. We went down when the Wild Goose Brewery went out of business. We went to their auction, and their kettle, their brew kettle.
Where was the Wild Goose Brewery?
It was in Maryland. And so they sort of got bought by Frederick's Brewery. But that was the brew kettle that we bought at their auction was the first British brew kettle to come to the United States in the early 80s. And so that was the first Peter Austin system. East Coast brewers are familiar with those. Specifically, if you go to the New England states, you see a lot of those brick brew kettles and brew pubs and breweries around. And that was the first one. And so that's a piece of brewing history for U.S.
1998, you guys started?
Yeah, we got the liquid off the track. We got the first kegs rolled down in 98. And we were off and running from there.
There's one system that we hear about going way back. Is it called Ring something?
Right. So that the British systems, you use a particular yeast strain called Ringwood. And so we did not adopt that yeast strain for that brewery, but we used that brew system.
Yeah, I mean, some people have criticized the Ringwold yeast.
That's correct.
Why do they criticize that?
It tends to be overpowering. So basically, if you have flight of beers, a lighter, an amber, a dark, whatever you want to call them. Eventually, they all sort of just take on that yeast characteristic, and that's the dominant flavor in the beer. So it takes away from all the elegant parts of the beer that you really want to try.
Wow. Awesome. Well, guys in the room here, we got Greenport, Blind Bat, Nico. You want to ask any questions, or Mark? We got a long show, but this is I'm digging this guy.
Always bring up with us the first day we closed on our tiny like firehouse in Greenport. We had a keg of Hoptical in the firehouse. I mean, it was not, there was no drains.
The Blue Point Hoptical, no, that's an awesome beer.
The Blue Point Hoptical, and it was a huge beer for us. And you know, for being from Long Island, opening up a brewery on Long Island, it's like you don't look anywhere but to Blue Point for inspiration, for you know how you basically discovered, you know, microbreweries and what that's all about. So it was a huge thing for us, was to like acknowledge like exactly what our inspiration was, and that was day one of our business. So I always like that story.
Paul, yeah, from Blind Bat.
Yeah, I mean, seconding that. I mean, serious kudos and huzzas to Mark and Pete. I mean, they were pioneers, obviously, on Long Island. There were some other breweries that didn't quite make it. They made it work, and they're still here and making awesome beer. We all just tried the white IPA, which is really delicious.
It was awesome. It's really a great beer, the white IPA. So. Before we sign off, Nico, anything you want to say about Blue Point?
Blue Point Brewing Company was one of the first beers that I probably got into on the craft side. After college, you know, I mean, everybody's college experience, just drinking Natty Light and Keystone and stuff like that. And when I came home, I really got interested in craft beer, and Toasted Lager was definitely one of the gateway beers for me, and really opened my eyes to what a brewery can, you know, produce and what beer can actually, it can be flavorful and, you know, be good to taste. And I'm happy that Blue Point's from Long Island, because they produce quality product.
That's awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. This will continue. We have a lot to talk about.
I'll light the fire. You place the flowers in the vase that you bought today. Staring at the fire for hours and hours while I listen to you play your love songs all night long.
Hey, all right. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We have an awesome Long Island group of people here tonight. I am not the poet, and I'm not the lyricist, but we've got the guy here tonight. Mark Burford from Blue Point Brewing is the guy, and you're going to hear from him because he's got so much to say. Mark, tell us about this white IPA from Blue Point that you made.
Well, it's kind of a new stylish kind of a thing. You know, this sort of the everything IPA concept going on, but I really like the way the hop flavors, the citrus hop flavors, are a natural blend for the wheat beer and the Belgian style yeasts. I think it actually lends itself to the IPA style a lot more than some of the other things that may be a little bit more just forced slightly. And so I think that it is another natural progression. And you know, we've been doing this a long time, and I think it's the bottom line for me is the fun of being able to create new stuff, and I think that is really what it comes down to. And so that the crispness of the white IPA, the drinkability, it brings that back to it. I think a lot of people are going to enjoy it, and it's something that I find that every time I have a pint of it, I'm actually looking at the empty bottom of my glass. And so I, you know, it has that sort of Moorish feeling to me, where you just want more, you know.
That's a great way. The more you want more. What I find, the more that I drink different beers, is sometimes when I go from brewery to brewery,
each brewery kind of has its own style on my palate, and it's like I have to like have like at least one beer and maybe two, and then my palate adjusts. I don't know if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And what if that's a combination of everything? It's the mix of yeast and hops and just the style. Let's ask Greg. Greg is the brewer here from Greenport Harbor, and we just tried your Maibock beer. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no,
help me say what I'm trying to say.
I think especially comparing these two beers, the Maibock, it's a traditional style that was brewed to kind of celebrate the return of spring. It's a lager. A Maibock is all about restraint. It's all about balance. And for us, this beer was about finding the balance between the malt and the hops. So we went with Northern Brewer and Spalt Select hops, and just three lighter malts, blended them together. And for us, I think this is a good representation of our brewery, the way we really try to brew balanced beers and try to make a statement with what we're saying with the beers. I think you can see that with a lot of the beers that we do, you know, whether it's the Black Duck Porter or the Harbor Ale. Going to the direction of the white IPA, that just like Mark is telling the story, has a really great message with it. And
yeah, we were just talking about the white IPA. We made a stop before coming here at Allswell, and we were talking about the white IPA there and heading to this thing. It's just amazing how small, you know, the brewing world can get. And specifically when you're from Long Island, when you start talking about Long Island breweries and going to a place and talking about other Long Island beers, I mean, we got here, Mark was here, he's bringing the white IPA. We were like, oh, we just had the white IPA, you know, and we're just talking about the white IPA and how good it was. So it's just, that is cool to me when you can be in a city as big as New York, and hit on a beer that you're about to have in, you know, a radio broadcast studio, and have it at a you know, restaurant just 10 minutes before and be talking about it. That's the cool part for me.
So Allswell's in Williamsburg, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that's a cool place. And Paul, from Blind Bat, you know, you're doing something totally different. I mean, you have a licensed brewery, which is basically in your garage.
Yep.
In your home.
Yes.
And you're different than these other guys, but, you know, you're making awesome beers too. How did you ever get started?
Actually, wine got me into making beer. I came to making brewing beer later in life than these other gentlemen. My wife and I, we made wine for our wedding, and she saw me kind of ogling the beer making supplies in the place where we were buying the wine making supplies. She surprised me Christmas beer making kit, and then I was just hooked. Being a smaller brewer, I have the advantage of maybe experimenting with some things that, you know, doing a smaller batch, originally 10 gallons, and now just 3 barrels, which is 93 gallons. It's less of a commitment than 15, 30, 60 barrels at a time, so I can kind of play with things a bit. Just to give a hat tip to some of the, you know, other Long Island breweries that aren't here today. We've got Barrier, obviously, brewing on a small scale, now expanding. Similar thing, experimenting with smaller scale batches. There's Barrage opening up in Farmingdale. There's Port Jeff, which has been going since October. There's Great South Bay. There's obviously Southampton, which has been going, I think, about as long as Blue Point. What else is happening? Mustache Brewing is getting up and going. Lori and Matthew Spitz, they've started a Kickstarter campaign. So folks, go on Kickstarter, please. Give them a hand. We've got Barrage Brewing. He's got a space in Farmingdale. So Long Island is really, really popping with breweries. But a lot of it really is to thanks to the pioneering efforts of seriously, Mark and Pete and the other people at Blue Point. So I'm tipping my proverbial hat, which I don't have on my head.
And Nico, you know, you're a blogger out in Long Island, and I know you write a lot about beer. You're always checking in on beer events. Give us an overview of Long Island beer, and also the Long Island Beer Week, the Craft Beer Week in Long Island.
Yeah, Long Island Craft Beer Week is going to be May 11th to the 20th, and it's just going to be a celebration of our culture on Long Island, our beer culture. I think we have 10 breweries right now operating and 3 brew houses, and it's just expanding. Port Jeff, as Paul mentioned, opened in October, and I think right after that, Spider Bite opened.
Right.
Larry, awesome brewer.
Excellent.
And, you know, we're just going from there, and it's just going to be a nine-day just hoopla of various events, just celebrating.
So what is it? Is there a website?
Yeah, it's longislandcraftbeerweek.com. You can log on and check out what events are going on.
And then what do you go to bars? Do you go to breweries?
Yeah, it's going to be bars are participating, breweries are participating. It's not only a celebration of Long Island craft beer, but just craft beer in general. And, you know, whether it be at a Long Island bar or at a Long Island brewery, it's just a celebration of craft beer. And, you know, it's nice to see that our scene has developed to the point where we can actually hold a nine-day week and just have events and just celebrate beer.
Wow, that's awesome. Well, Mark, let's go back to Mark. Cause, okay, so what was this, 1908?
Yeah, it's 1908.
1908, you just learned about malts and...
the Model T was our first delivery vehicle. You know?
Who's the guy in England? Ron Pattinson, he's doing recipes about... all these weird things. Did you ever check out Ron Pattinson's website?
I have not, but it sounds like something I should check.
Yeah, the guys from Pretty Things. This Ron Pattinson, does anybody know who this guy is? He has a website. I don't know the name of it. But he looks at historical recipes. And he goes back to the 19th century and early 1900s. And I don't know, I'm just trying to play with you. But you guys should check him out. Because at one time, people actually... the beer recipes were different. And... pre-prohibition, there was a lot going on, but we'll talk about that another time. But tell us, going back to your, we're at 1998. You guys are Blue Point.
1998, yeah, we're starting, and so we roll off Toasted Lager as our first beer, and so two, we kegged the beer, we put it in our parking lot, and we're sort of in a seaside little spot by a marina down there, and next to, we call it East Blue Point. It's called Patchogue. And so the we run it out, and we didn't know what to do. My partner, Pete Cotter, and I, you know, we had just started it. We just physically kegged. Everything was hand-done. And we're standing there looking at each other, and we're like, what do we do? So we just ran around and knocked on the doors of all the businesses that are in our little complex, and we rolled a kegerator out, and we jumped up and down and said, we got beer! We did it! We're not lying! You know? And they all came out, and it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and everybody just started drinking, and then, you know, the first keg was gone, and we were like, oh, no, now we got to go back inside and keg another one. You know, we got to... Okay, and so we had a few kegs of beer, and it was really different back then. I mean, it was really, we'd go to the neighborhood bar. And, you know, in order to reduce our bar bill, we had started the brewery. And so it was important. And so those were our good friends at our first few places that took us on tap. They knew us very well. And, you know, they knew our foibles and our troubles and how we acted late at night and so forth. But so they trusted us enough that they knew we drank beer. And so the first few folks put us on tap, the Sage Cafe, the Cull House, the Savel Inn. These were the people that really, you know, everybody thought, really, really looked at you very strangely when you said you had a brewery down the street. I mean, it was unusual in Long Island at the time. And it is, you know, a tip of the hat to everybody that's in this room right now, because things have changed. And I was in a, just to fast forward a minute, I was in a restaurant in Jericho, Long Island, where there was a Blind Bat beer on tap, Golden, right? And that's the name of the place, Market...
Market Bistro.
Yeah, Market Bistro,
just
right.
South of the old Mineral Gin.
Right, exactly. And you wouldn't expect that area necessarily to be craft savvy, but this person opened up a very nice restaurant, and I happened to come in, and I saw one of his beers on tap and had it, and it was fantastic. And I was sitting there, and at that moment, and I'm thinking, how far Long Island beer has come in so long, and so long and so short. I mean, it was 1998. Now I can go in for a guy that's making great beer in Nassau County, and a brand new restaurant's going to accept that kind of thing right off the bat. We're on the right track. Everybody in this room's on the right track.
Wow. But let's go back to the 1970s.
Right.
I mean, separate from the other things that were going on, and discos and all that, I mean, it was really like the black market just to get home brewing supplies?
It really was. And it was, you had to have a secret code, and it was the basement of, like, you know, I was a young kid, so to me it seemed like some big giant project, but it was a big apartment complex. And he was a real reserved English guy. And once he let you in, we got introduced through somebody. And he had John Bull cans of malt syrup there. If anybody's, I'm not sure that brand's around in homebrewing anymore, but that was one of the English brands that were early on in the homebrewing world. And he had, you know, some funky old English hops. We didn't know any better, you know, and some dry yeast. And so none of the ingredients were what we would call top shelf today. Most of them would be unacceptable today. But, and, you know, the directions were one can of malt, 1 to 5 gallons of beer. And we've all learned in America that you have to double that up. That is a idea that came out of trying to make homebrewing an economic success, you know, trying to make beer cheaper at home than you can buy. And that never ends up with the quality of beer that you're looking for. We saw that homebrewing has changed its tune on that whole completely. And so it really was in the bottom of this old red brick place. And it was kind of scary. And you know, it was exciting for me being 15. And it was like, it was really an illicit operation. And, you know, we would drive into my older brother's old car and I trusted him. But yeah, we were still teenagers, you know. What were we doing? We were hoping not to get arrested, and we'd go back to, you know,
just to
house.
Get some malt and yeast.
Yeah, really, it was just malt hops and yeast. We actually had our own water. It was unbelievable. And so even out on Long Island then, we had our own water.
Indoor
and
plumbing.
Right, exactly. It was indoor plumbing. And so we had, you know, able to get glass carboys and the equipment and so forth. And it was really all, he wasn't an equipment guy, it was just the ingredients. And so we cobbled the equipment together and made beer in the kitchen and did that kind of thing. And some of the beer was actually not bad. Nobody has an ugly baby, you know what I mean?
Wow. Well, yeah, that's so funny because just for personal context, I was still in junior high school when you guys were doing this stuff. And
I don't even think I was born yet.
Yeah, right. You know,
there's a middle finger.
John's giving me the middle finger right now. But
well, how about Greg? How about this? Let's jump ahead. I mean, we're digging the Blue Point White IPA and the Maibock. Give me a little more with the Maibock.
Okay.
And tell me a little more about...
So smooth. Let's talk about how good it is to drink down, my
so this
gosh.
Is like... Now we're here in, you know... What was this? 2000 and what? 7?
Yeah.
And I'm only 20 years old. I love this.
It's a time-traveling beer show.
But you guys, this is like one of... What I love about this room is that I actually do business with all these guys. It's like, you know, you got Blue Point, Mark, you know, John and Greg from Greenport, and Paul from Blab. And Paul actually, you know, when I'm lucky enough to get his beer, he actually comes and brings me his little mini keg. And once people know I have it, there's like a little flock of like maybe 10 people that'll show up because they want to get Blind Bat. And that's like the beauty of like the new, you know, this new world of beer. And then Greenport, you got John and Greg. It's like they're like their local brewery out in, you know, North Fork, Long Island. And the same thing, they've got this own little, you know, capsule of interests and fans. And, you know, the scene's very cool now. And I have to say, we're going to raise our glass. We're going to say, you know, we love our local breweries, and we're really happy that you guys are all doing it. And we're going to take a short break. We're going to say, hey, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network.
Listening to Buck Owens, do, 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 looking out my back door. Tambourines and elephants are playing in the band.
All right, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Check it out. This is like the coolest. Check it out. If you'd like NPR, You're going to like Heritage Radio Network. I'm sure you do because you're listening.
It's like NPR with Jimmy.
Yeah, here we are. Well, and other guys and Patrick Martins. But here we are. We're talking with Mark Burford from Blue Point, which is like, you know, the whole story of brewing in America. Right here with this guy from Maui to Long Island, all this stuff. And we're stuck at 1998. And we're trying to decide, should we talk more about when he started in Maui? Or should we talk what it's like to have a small brewery in a place like Long Island? Let's talk about that. So you guys, early before the show, there's some issues when you're setting up a brewery. There's issues like, of course, you know, leases and licenses. But some of the more specific issues are, you know, you have to use a lot of water to make beer. And then also you have to put that water back into the sewer system in your community. So we've got Paul from Blind Bat, Greg and John from Greenport, and Mark from Blue Point. Let's have a little serious conversation about what it's actually like to run a brewery and deal with the issues of, you know, water use and wastewater, because, you know, it does happen. I know people that have tried to open breweries, and some communities do not want that, and others are open to it.
Yeah, I feel like for Greenport anyway, and I thought we agreed not to talk about this issue, but Jimmy raised it as the intrepid, you know, interviewer he is. Greenport was a master stroke for us. Anybody who's looking to start a brewery out there, we lucked out. There's a crap load of luck involved in starting a brewery, and we chose Greenport, and for a bunch of different reasons. Anybody who's ever been there would know why you'd want to make beer there, because it's awesome and beautiful. But the town itself is just really good and supportive and chill, and there's not a lot of bureaucracy, and they were just good to us, I mean, on every level. So we were hugely supported, welcomed, and as we grew, you know, people were like, God, we really wanted you guys to do well, but we didn't think, you know, we weren't sure what this whole brewery thing was. But we were, the town, like, embraced us, which is big, because I think we talked earlier, it's like, that is not the first instinct of a town or a government or municipality is to embrace change and to say, we'll, like, take the risk on this. So they, you know, need to jump in it pretty wholeheartedly. And I like the Wisnowski story. our head sales guy is Justin Wisnowski, Wisnowski Farms. But anyway, so it's like, for us, it was a huge amount of luck to choose Greenport. And we will never forget that, you know, that we were able to grow very fast.
And Paul, you have an interesting story, because you're like in a town in Long Island,
right?
And you're zoned like for light industrial use. So like,
I'm very, again, talk about luck. I'm very fortunate to live in the town of Huntington, the village of Centerport. Actually, it's not an incorporated village, but we're in the town of Huntington, and the local zoning allows for light manufacturing in a residential area, so long as there are various restrictions. I don't bother the neighbors. And as far as the water issue goes, we're not on sewers. We have a cesspool, but we also set up a gray water system because my wife does a bit of growing on the property. We have a greenhouse, so we do quite a bit of that. And over the past 4 years that I've been operating on this small nano part-time scale, so it's not a lot of water that's getting used compared to these other gentlemen.
So what is gray water? I mean,
gray water, you know, it's the stuff that you use when you're rinsing and all that stuff. The water
so
you're not
you,
using
when you use a brewery,
to brew it.
So let's get this straightened out.
Yeah,
you have to bring a lot of water in to make the beer, but that's not most of it. Most
not
of it's
all of the
washing,
water goes into the beer. I mean,
cleaning your equipment.
You spend, I think, as much, if not more, time cleaning and sanitizing. You know, as much as the actual water used during brewing. So anyways, over the 4 years, I've only succeeded in killing some of my bamboo. Otherwise, the other plants have been happy.
But then when you clean things, do you using like certain chemicals? Or are you trying to be natural?
I'm using, there's a line, five-star chemicals. They have more earth-friendly type of cleaners and sanitizers. So yeah, that's what I've been using.
And Greg, has this come up for you guys out in Greenport and North Fork, Long Island?
It's not so much of a problem for us in Greenport because they have been so accepting to us and we're hooked up to a sewer. Considering our new site that we're expanding to, it is going to be a little bit more of an issue because we are putting in a personal septic system to use. You know, with that said, it's always kind of difficult to deal with bureaucracy and people that don't necessarily understand.
In a really good way, though.
Yeah, in a great way.
The best people in the world.
Boy, they are friends.
Yeah. We really, yeah, it's really good. We're going to dig 54 different wells. Yeah.
I'm glad that nobody can hear you, John. But Mark, let's go. But now back to Blue Point. So, Mark.
Here, let John say something.
Come on. Tell us about what it's like. You know, you've got a decent-sized craft brewery. Are there issues with water and waste and all that stuff?
Yeah. So the so if you look at the mechanics of it all, it's about 5 to 7 gallons of water for every gallon of beer that comes out of the place, you know? So you have to, that goes somewhere. Now, there's the beauty of this discussion, and this discussion that I always have with people, is that breweries are not polluters. It's not something that's coming out of the brewery that's bad for the environment or anything. It's about us working with the systems that exist. And so, I'm not boring everybody to tears. The system is, the brewers, we all have a lot of yeast in our breweries. That's what makes the wonderful beer that we all drink. And that yeast combats the bacteria that's at the sewer plant that's breaking down what you people put into it. And so the what we end up having is the yeast and the bacteria do battle. And if it upsets the chemistry at the plant, then those people get very nervous. And their system, their ecosystem goes out of whack. And they have to find the people upstream that are causing that problem. And so what you do is you set up previous all those informations. Now, as breweries were new to Long Island when we started in Patchogue, at the time we started in Patchogue in the late 90s, the drug dealers were on Main Street using the payphones, and it was a different version of what Patchogue is today. Patchogue has come a long way since we started. It's a very nice town to visit now. At the time we started, it wasn't, and consequently they were open to having a brewery in their town. But when we've grown over the years, fortunately, and we've sort of maxed out their system there, and so we've had a lot of dealings with them on how to continue there. And so it's been I know a lot more about sewer systems than I ever wanted to know in my life. I'll be honest, I'm still back on the Maui Mountain, as you would say, and you know, now I can explain.
But where does that go, Mark? You got. You using most of the water is just you're cleaning your equipment, and it's just basically just water that's got some stuff on it, like yeast.
Right. So,
it's not like bad stuff. It's not like, you know, Exxon Mobil, you know, right. Corporate we're not, oil.
We are not polluting. All we're doing is
toxic chemicals. You don't
no,
do that.
No, no.
It's beer. It's real stuff. It's live. It's natural.
Breweries are green by nature, and there are certainly most of us have that on the mind now, but they really are green. Manufacturing plants, without a doubt. Everything that comes in goes out, gets reused. In this room, one of the challenges on Long Island is what to do with your barley, the spent barley that's done after you make beer with. There are a few places to bring it to and things to do with it. But if you anywhere else in the rest of the country, spent barley is something that's easy to get rid of. Farmers want it to feed cows, pigs, and other livestock. In Long Island, we don't have much of that, if very little. And so it is a challenge to get rid of your waste products on Long Island for a brewery. And so that's the same kind of conversation as the sewer system. We are having a difficult play with it, but when you educate yourself and you get to know the people you're working with and you start your relationships and you show them the science that they should already know, then you're able to get through it.
I think that's something that really benefits us from being so far out east. We work with a few different farmers out there to get rid of our spent grain. And we work with a buffalo farmer up in Wading River.
Does he have a name?
We don't like to share the name because everyone else is gonna. No.
There's only one buffalo crab. Yeah.
And somebody in our tasting room, actually, Leanne makes spent grain bread.
Yeah,
so and sells it to a local restaurant. So we try to be as use as much as we can. In a lot of ways, that's selfish. It's being green and sustainable, which we have a sustainable person on staff. But we also need to get rid of a large amount of spent grain. And I can't even imagine what Blue Point has to deal with. But we put in large garbage cans and we ship it to the
Buffalo Farms. Let's just say, like, if you didn't have a system, before we get to Paul, if you didn't have a system, like, I was in Amsterdam once and there was this cool old brewery, the Brewery Ige. It's like,
oh, yeah.
The egg brewery.
Oh,
yeah. They're like tiny. They're a brew pub. All their spent grain goes to North Amsterdam to a sheep farmer. And he feeds it to his sheep, and they make a little, like a Camembert-style sheep's cheese, and then they send it back, and they sell it at the brewery. That's, like, perfect. But what you're doing, like, even at Blue Point, Blue Point's like a craft brewery, but you're not, like, you know, the size of my fist. I mean, how do you deal with your spent grain?
Well, we have, over the years, we've done a couple different things. So back in 1998, back then, we had the last cow farmer on Long Island. He used to come and get it, and it was used for cow feed when we started, and it was an ideal situation. He was the brother of my gym teacher in sixth grade. That was a little weird, but, you know, just remember, and the guy was one of them big, fat gym teachers. He used to jump on the trampoline, and you'd look underneath, and it would go way down, and everybody would laugh, you know, that one? Anyway, so what he did was it was in Matatuck, and he actually sold his whole farm for condos and retired. So that's a long, winding Long Island story that happens over and over again. And so right now we compost it. So it goes to commercial composting, and so it gets reused that way.
Yeah. And Paul, you're a blind bat.
Yes.
You're like this on the small end of
right. Yeah, I mean, on my small scale, a lot of the spent grain is going to my wife and I have a friend, Jen Murray, who is operating out of Ship's Hall Farm in Smithtown. She has chickens and sheep, which are getting the spent grain. But my wife also is the organic farmer at Fox Hollow Farm in South Huntington. And she just got a SARE grant to study the use of spent grain as a mulch. So she's doing a study of using spent grain as a mulch, which there are actually in the North Fork of Long Island a good number of organic farmers who might be interested in that. So
sure, there's some Cornell Cooperative.
Yes, we did some work as well.
We did some work with them years ago. The gentleman had left, but he had a mulch for wine vines in particular to change the chemical composition of the ground right around the wine vines. He was making some good progress. He had to leave that program, unfortunately.
The difficulty, though, is that we just produce so much of it, and that's why for us we work with three or four different farmers, and we have Leanne in the tasting room who makes spent grain bread. You know, we work with a chicken farmer. We have a guy out in East Marion who's doing pigs and chickens. There's a North Fork Egg Company who's doing pasture-raised chickens that supplements the feed with our spent grain. We have the Buffalo Farm. You know, to make 30 barrels of beer, you're looking at, you know, at least a ton of grain. It's a difficult solution.
It's bound to be the kind of thing where it's no one solution, many things. And then also there's a guy, member of, I think, Brewers East End Revival and Long Island Beer Malt Enthusiast, Keith Palazzo, who's making dog biscuits from spent grain. That's a thing.
Right. You have to realize that New York City creates a bottleneck for shipping for Long Island, so you can't feasibly financially ship the product out to where we send our garbage, like Pennsylvania or somewhere, you know, in the rural area.
So you're on Long Island and everything has to go through New York City.
Right, exactly. And so that's not really feasible to ship your byproducts off Long Island financially. And so you do have to create these.
So we need to create like a baking contest for a spent grain bread recipe and have everybody do it or something.
Somebody's doing spent grain burgers, too.
Oh, they really?
Yeah.
That sounds disgusting. Let's get Nico.
Nico.
We had a, did I ever tell you about the crop circle ale that we did?
Right. So. We can give you Leanne's cell phone, too. She welcomes all calls. She's an amazing baker.
555.
All right. Two last things. John from Greenport. Okay, John, you got to tell us about your website was one of the coolest websites in the world.
So my biggest fan of my website is Jimmy. Thank God for that. Our first website was handmade, and that's a generous term for it. We basically shot a keg in the middle of Greenport Harbor on the coldest day of the year, and it kept sinking. So we'd go out there and rescue it and reshoot it, like sinking again. And we put it on our website, and that's the only information people got. And thank God Jimmy loved it, because everybody else around me was completely horrified by it. But it was a little bit of cool. It was very spare. It was a floating keg. We're at Greenport Harbor. What else do you need to know more than that? Right. So,
and Nico, our top Long Island blogger, you want to ask any questions of these really great brewers? Before we sign off,
Where do you see Long Island going? I mean, we're in 2012 right now, and Long Island's obviously expanding. Where do you see craft beer going on Long Island?
Mark, go for it.
Well, it's certainly it's a dawn. I really believe it. That, you know, we've been at this a long time, and people ask me all the time, you know, how do you feel about it? To me, I feel that we're just getting started. I think things on Long Island are exploding. The people in this room are total testament to that, and it's only going to get greater from here. And you know, I'm from the West Coast. There's a big beer community, and we're just kind of starting on that on Long Island. And I think everybody in this room, you know, is an extraordinary person with an extraordinary gift, and it's not a joke. I believe in that. And so that Long Island, I think the in front of us is going to be just absolutely a spectacular journey.
Yeah, I mean, we're super excited. You know, at Greenport, we're, you know, making the beers we want to make. We're getting I think luck is a huge part of this business, because things shift. You know, government regulations shift, people's desire about what they want to consume shifts. But we're in a space now where we're like able to make the beers we want. We're making it where we want to make it, and Long Island is the place where we choose. So we're super excited about, you know, what is coming.
Yeah, and if I may, I mean, Long Island, very fertile ground. A lot of that thanks to, we've got an awesome, creative homebrewing community. Some people who join things such as Long Island Beer Malthusiasts or Brewers Eastern Revival, or people who just, you know, lone wolf brewers. But people are finally, on Long Island, we are behind much of the country, particularly the West Coast, Colorado. But Long Island is ready to burst open, and more and more breweries opening, and it's great for everybody.
I'll give a plug. I mean, if you know Blind Bat, it's cultish, it's tiny. I mean, it really is made in Paul's garage, and it's legal, which is awesome. And it shows you a lot of potential of New York State breweries, because you know what? There's some really cool laws in New York which give a lot of support to really small breweries, whether you can brew your own brew, you can brew your own beer, and then you can also sell it, right, as growlers or bottles out of your brewery. You can also self-deliver,
yep,
which is what some of the real small guys do. And you can also set up a quasi-tasting room. And I think New York has a really great legal environment for small breweries.
The self-distribution is huge in New York State. Not every state has that. So
I mean, right now we have Bronx Brewery, which is a startup, Barrier, mm-hmm, just two alone that actually deliver to our bar on a weekly basis. And we actually enjoy it, too, because we got to interact with the brewer on a weekly basis. And I love it. I think New York has really good law. So
I think one of the great things about everyone in this room is we all are involved in making the beer. And that would be kind of the one thing that I see on Long Island is being possibly problematic, is this kind of move to just contract brew and not brew any of your own beer whatsoever, and be more of a marketing company where it's kind of gimmicky and it's more about the ad campaign you have going and less about this product that we all really feel passionate about and that is our kind of avenue of expressing who we are. And for me, that's very important.
I was gonna say I mostly agree with you. I think for the person who is ordering a beer, the bottom line is the beer in the glass.
Yeah.
So if we can deliver that, then you know that's great. But I do believe in the integrity, as you say, as being the artisanal producers of that. But I think the person.
Let's ask Mark. Mark, one last thing before we sign up, Mark. You know, there's a lot of new breweries coming up that are just kind of a brewery and label or recipe, and they're working. There's some great places like Butternuts Upstate that actually are making, you know, quite a few breweries, you know, initial beers. How do you feel about this? I'm more a fan of, I want to meet the brewers who are making the beer. I appreciate the investment that you're making in a brewery. How do you feel about, you know, people making their own beer versus contracting it out when they get started?
Well, I think ultimately it's in your own. The beer is in the glass. I think that I believe that you in brewer owned breweries, I believe the brewer should be near the top of the pyramid in any brewery. And I believe that, you know, we live in Blue Point. We are part contract, part brew our own beer. So I have my point of view on it. But, you know, Butternuts, he used to work for me, Chuck, and he worked for me at Long Island Brewing Company in the early 90s. And Chuck and Leo, and Leo's out of it now. But that's and Tom Keegan from Keegan Ales used to work for me. So those are sort of breweries that have spawned off of people that have worked for us. And I think that the reality is that you have to bring the beer to people, and if it how you get it there and the mechanism you go through. I mean, if you want to be on the bus, you don't necessarily have to go through the front door, and so there's a lot of challenges. I mean, we operate our brewery on Long Island. Everybody in this room does, and there's a lot of challenges to that. We also operate contract operations, and there's a whole set of challenges to that. And I think they both have their merit, and they both have their play. I can understand the people that are just contract customers. I mean, we get calls a lot. I mean, recently, the strangest one I ever got, there was a guy who, he had a line of weapons inspector clothing. If we remember the Iraq War, everybody remembers that fondly. And they had the weapons inspector clothing. You know, they all dressed up in that way. And he wanted to branch out and make a weapons inspector ale. And so he had called me up and wanted to step into it. And, you know, and I tried to explain it to him that it would, if he wrote me a check for $250,000, I'd be happy to help him. But, you know, other than that, you know, I think you should stay in the apparel business, and I think that's the kind of thing that drives brewers bananas. Is people come up with this? I mean, my second version of that is on the California ballot, anybody can run for governor if you get enough signatures. It's not a lot of signatures, and somebody had called me and wanted to make a beer called Butt Monkey Ale, and what the way they were going to launch the product nationally was they were going to get enough run signatures in California to make Butt Monkey a candidate, and so it was okay for that was going to legally happen. They had a business plan, they were all set, and they wanted me to help them, you know, facilitate Butt Monkey Ale on the East Coast, you know, and so. So, you know, it's these kind of ideas that really separate what's going on in brewers that are sitting in this room from these kind of kooky and unusual marketing ideas. And I think, you know, the world's a big place, and there's room for all kinds of stuff. But I think that dramatically shows the difference from people who are picking up barley to people who are just trying to take advantage of the situation.
And, you know, I think for me, even though it might be a little bit self-interested to say that the craftsperson who plays a role in the crafting of a product, especially with a craft product, I would like to think that we play some sort of role. And, you know, I'm fine if people want to make beer. But if you want to put yourself in the craft, you know, segment or however you want to call it, I think the craftsperson should play a role. It's the same way you go into a restaurant. You want the chef who's cooking the food there to make your food.
As opposed to Restaurant Depot.
Yes.
Well, it's awesome. What you've said is really true. It's also what happens in food. It's about transparency. Yeah. You know, some guy comes in and says, "Oh, this is our new beer." Then you find out like 2 months later that they're not making it, and you really need to know if they're coming in with a new beer and they're making it or they're not making it. And I think that's important because people do want to know. You know, if you have the craft behind it, I think if it's craft beer, it almost should be you should be making it. I have Paul. One more thing, because.
Yeah, I'm sorry, quickly. Just, I mean, obviously I'm making all the beer that I you know, put out. But for some folks, I mean, that's only way they can get started. I mean, obviously, I mean, Brooklyn Brewery, which I think we've all enjoyed, got started contract only, and they eventually built their own brewery. So I think there are legitimate ways to get there. I think it's good for the consumer to know, where is this beer really made? And if they care about artisanal in various things, including beer, then choose that.
Let's start with transparency. If you have a great recipe and you're making somewhere else, just tell people that up front and give them your vision that you want to have your own brewery or whatever you want to do. Nico. Yeah.
What do you think the flavor profile would be for the Butt Monkey Ale?
I think Mark knows.
I'd like... I like it.
That's our next show. How about that?
Banana parts.
This is guys, a week of shows.
We did an hour show. We could be 2 hours, but tonight it's 1 hour. So let's do this. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Thank you. And supported by the Good Brew Seal, goodbrewseal.com. Thank you again. Thanks to Greg, Paul, Mark, John, and Mika. Who's Mika? Nika.
Nika.
For joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor, and guest coordinator Brett Thompson, and our new engineer back there, Joe.
Hey,
we'll
Joe.
See you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thank you very much.
Woo! Woo!
I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much. Vodka puts my mouth in gear. This little refrain should help me explain, as a matter of fact.